I have a couple of announcements that I want to make before the lesson this morning. First of all, as most of you know, six of us will be traveling to Jamaica, leaving on the 2nd of July. If you have an old, worn-out suitcase that you don't mind departing with that we can leave behind, we could probably use that. We're going to be carrying supplies down there, Bibles and other things, and it would be a whole lot easier to carry some of those things in a suitcase than it would be in a box. And if you have an old suitcase you don't mind giving up, let me know and get it to us as soon as possible. We would appreciate that. Also, I am pleased to announce this morning that after careful and prayerful thought on the part of Paul and Tommy and myself, and in light of an overwhelming support of the congregation, we are pleased to announce that as of today, that Brian Beck will be considered to serve as an elder in this congregation. And we humbly look forward to our time of serving together with him.
Amen.
I greatly admire the men and women who settled this country, who left the old world to come to a new world, to make the sacrifices that they made, who came with a great work ethic, who came that would work from sunup to sundown. I have tremendous respect for the greatest generation that we call the men of World War II, the men and women that made great sacrifices so that we could enjoy the freedom that we enjoy. And it's because of generations past that I live in a world in which we enjoy unprecedented leisure, unprecedented wealth, unprecedented times in which we can just enjoy entertainment and times together. However, the older I get, the more I appreciate a group of men and women that are mentioned by the Hebrew writer in the 11th chapter. When he says, "These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland, and truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared for them a city." Here the Hebrew writer referred to the patriarchs, these men and women of faith. I have tremendous admiration for them because they truly believed and they saw and believed in the invisible through the eye of faith, because they found very little value in this world and tremendous value in the world to come. It's because of them that we have come together today, because we believe also in the promise of God, that we can come and sing what a day of rejoicing it will be when we all get to heaven. There is another Old Testament character that I also admire. In the book of Joshua, the 24th chapter, the nation of Israel had settled the land of promise. They had finally arrived at the goal. The battles had been fought. The land had been divided among the tribes. And in the city of Shechem, Joshua gathered the nation together for a warning, a charge to the nation. He says, "Now therefore fear the Lord serve Him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the God which your father served on the other side of the river and in Egypt. Serve the Lord. And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourself this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your father served that were on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. One of the things that I observe about that statement is that it reminds me of the fact that the times of Joshua, I think, greatly mirror our times of leisure and luxury and enjoyment of wealth. And therefore, Joshua warned the nation about falling before the gods of the nation and the land in which they dwell. And his charge was that they were to serve Jehovah God, that their devotion was to be to Him, and they were to put away these false gods. The reality is that this land of milk and honey was going to bring great challenges. Challenges that would probably threaten Israel more than in any other time. Thus, it's interesting that in the 13th verse, God would make this observation. I have given you a land for which you did not labor, and cities which you did not build, and you dwell in them. You eat of the vineyards and olive groves which you did not plant. Today I live in a land of milk and honey. I live in a land for which I did not labor. It was a World War II generation. It was the Great Depression generation. It was generations gone by that have given me the opportunity to live in a society that enjoys unprecedented prosperity, unprecedented wealth, and time just to enjoy leisure. And yet I also live in a society that is very, very unsatisfied in spite of all of its wealth. We live in a modern world that we didn't work for. You see, the world of grandma and grandpa was far different from the world, even my own time. The world of nanny and granddad, my grandparents, was a time of work and sleep, basically. Two things, work and sleep. But times changed with the Industrial Revolution and now the information age. The time of working sun up to sun down has become too sophisticated. Or belittle for a rather sophisticated society in which we live. And thus we enjoy a level of wealth unlike any other. And given our life, and given the land of milk and honey in which we live, do you not see then something in Joshua's challenge to the nation that ought to be something that we ought to consider? Should this not cause us to question the dangers of our generation and the dangers of our society? For if going from tents to houses, if leaving a wilderness to go to cities, from campsite to communities, and manna to milk and honey challenge the nation of Israel, how much more would it challenge our generation? Just how risky it is for Christians to live in a world and a land of plenty and a land of leisure, where we have more opportunity to satisfy our cravings than any other time in the history of the world. Do you not believe that in some fashion this would affect our character? I think it has. Consider with me some of the dangers of leisure and entertainment. Number one, entertainment in our world has become a core value. It has become the basis of our decisions. No longer do we honor honesty, integrity, compassion, and service, but rather we judge the self-worth or the worth of a person on the basis of simply nothing more than are they fun to be with, based upon whether or not they have a lot, or based upon how much luxury or how much leisure they enjoy. Can think about it. We judge situations. We judge a movie. We judge a book. We judge a preacher. We judge everything by the value of whether or not they're entertaining. Even the preacher has to have charisma. Some kind of stage appeal. The politician must have some kind of stage appeal, some kind of charisma. Who cares about the policies? Who cares about what he stands for? We even choose friends and make relationships based upon that value. Well, are they fun to be with? That becomes the core value of whether or not this is the kind of relationship that we want to have. And in the education field, no longer do we train our children that they need to be good listeners, but we put a great deal of pressure upon the teacher and upon the educator, and they must be innovative, and they must have interactive ways of learning, or otherwise they're of no value. We measure work upon whether or not it's fun to do, not whether or not it's valuable or offers a valuable service or offers quality, but rather, is that a fun place to work? If so, then that's the kind of place I want to work. And even religion is based upon this core value of entertainment. And thus, you can drive down 1604 and you can find one mega church after another that is offering the world what they want. And thus, the gym and the family life center become man's way of worship. Thus, life is entertainment, and entertainment is life. Is that all there is? And boredom has become the sin of our time. That's why I love again the statement that the Hebrew writer makes when he refers to the faith of Moses. That he esteemed the reproach of Christ more valuable, of greater riches than all the treasures of Egypt. Because that's where our value ought to be. That we would choose a bunch of brick-making Jewish slaves that had faith in God over all the luxury and treasures the world has to offer. You see, entertainment has become a core value. And not only that, but entertainment has become a thief of family time. I mean, we have all kinds of time. We have tea time, we have party time, we have play time, we have practice time. But where is the family time? And when we have supper time, we, of course, have to share that with TV time. And the only time that we have family time is occasional fun time, which is not necessarily inappropriate. But where is the quiet time that was enjoyed by generations past? In the book of Deuteronomy, the 6th chapter, I'm reminded of the statement given by Moses to the nation of Israel, to the fathers of Egypt, the fathers of Israel. In Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 6, "And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. You will bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlet between your eyes, and you shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates." Where is the time to do that? The time to talk about God when you rise up and when you lie down. The time just to sit around the table, the quiet time, just to talk about spiritual values, to talk about heaven and heavenly things, to talk about God and His greatness, and to talk about the greatness of His Son and the wonders of His sacrifice. Where do we have the time to talk about those things? You see, entertainment has become the thief of that. Entertainment has replaced heavenly investments with trivial pursuits. No time for hospitality. No time to invite a family into our home for a meal and a Bible study. No time for prayer and for heavenly talk. Little time for Bible reading and Bible meditation and simply private worship. I want you to look in the book of Matthew, the 25th chapter again. I'll tell you, when I read this, it challenges me. In the 25th chapter of Matthew, Jesus is describing the judgment scene. And Jesus is describing the judgment scene, and he says in verse 31, "When the Son of Man comes in His glory and all the holy angels with Him, then He will sit on the throne of His glory, and all the nations will be gathered before Him. He will separate them one from another as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats, and He will set the sheep on His right hand, but the goats on the left." And what is it that separates these two? Note it in verse 34. "The king will say to those on his right hand, 'Come to you, blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the earth. For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me.'" What separates the two? The sheep are those who serve, who feed and clothe the downtrodden. Entertainment has crowded all of that out. We're so consumed with the latest gadget, so consumed with the latest movie, so consumed with the leisure time, that we have no time for kindness that cost us nothing or cost very little, except simply a heart of being devoted to others, that simply cares about others. The fact is that we live in a five-talent society that has no time for God and others. That's reality. We live in a land of milk and honey with all its danger. Entertainment has replaced heavenly value with, or heavenly investment with, trivial pursuits. Entertainment has erased our moral sensitivity. I think Jamie talked about that Wednesday night in a good start and a good class. Where Solomon says, "Give your heart with all diligence, or keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life." Proverbs chapter 4. Because the reality is that whatever is in our heart shapes our lives. It shapes our ambitions, it shapes our dreams, it shapes our goals, it shapes our lives, and it will shape our destiny. So what do you put in a heart? As Jamie said in Jeremiah the 8th chapter, here was a generation who committed abomination, but they were not at all ashamed. They had lost their ability to blush. And I would agree that to some degree that character would describe even our time and our generation. While we can bring hell right into our home, in fact, we've got a pipeline on the roof of the house. We have made sinful pleasure extremely easy. And those things that we would be appalled at if they were in our family life, we will laugh at the movie theater or in front of a television screen. We live in a generation in which it is easy to be bad because we have a broadband access right into the devil's den. Don't you know that God sees that? And do we not understand that God sent His Son to die for the very sins at times that we laugh about and that we deem to be funny? God gave His Son upon a cross to redeem man from corruption of this world, to redeem man from sin. And so, we've lost our sensitivity. We've lost our moral bearings. And we've sort of gradually just been led into the ways of the world. That's the danger of our time. The danger of entertainment is that finally entertainment has become our God. Reality is that it gets the best of our time and energy and the most of our attention. Can you imagine Joshua saying, "Put away those gods, the gods of the land in which you dwell, and but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." That is, that Jehovah God will get the best of our sacrifice. And imagine as Israel marched through the wilderness, and there was that tabernacle was in the middle of the camp to remind them that God was to be at the center of their life. And every meal, clean and unclean, every meal, everything that they did was a reminder that God was there and that they were to serve Jehovah God. But I would suggest to you that God sometimes is not the center of our life. I go back to 1967. I was a young boy then, and I was an avid fan of Tom Landry's Dallas Cowboys. And I remember watching that game on television, hoping that finally that my favorite team would win the championship game that would launch them and to put them into the Super Bowl. Thousands of fans showed up in Green Bay, Wisconsin on an extremely cold day. Athletes, because of sub-zero temperatures, would literally risk their life and even limb to play in that game. Some of them, even today, still suffer because they played in that one game. Do you think the same people would have showed up for a gospel sermon under the same conditions? Do you think they would have done that? You know the answer. In fact, would you have showed up under those conditions to hear a gospel sermon? Ball games, fishing trips, golfing, vacations. The reality is that we'll drive all night. We'll take off early. We'll skip a meal. We'll stand in line. We'll go in debt. We'll tolerate uncomfortable seating and bad weather and even risk sickness or injury and death. For what? For fun. For leisure. But for God, you can forget it. We wouldn't do that for God. Now give us the padded pew. And God forbid if the AC goes out and I'm a little uncomfortable. You see, God doesn't get our best. That's reality. Because sometimes entertainment has become our God. So what are we to do? Well, listen to Joshua. First of all, Joshua says, "Fathers, be responsible for the spiritual condition of your family." Joshua is saying, "I'm taking charge. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Fathers, be responsible for the spiritual condition of your family. Number two, develop a healthy fear of God. We need a healthy dose of fear of God and reverence for Him and an indignation for sin and unrighteousness and all the things that He would be upset with. Number three, serve the Lord. And what I mean by that is plan time to serve God. I have known people that would give up vacation time for missionary work. They would give up vacation time and leisure time for gospel meetings. Plan time to serve God. In your daily lives, plan time to have Bible study and prayer. I mean, we spend all our time planning on how we're going to have fun. Can we not plan some time for serving God? And finally, put those idols away. Take them out and put them in the garbage dumpster. Take them out to the landfill and bury them. I'm reminded in the book of Genesis that it was also at Shechem, the same place in which Joshua had gathered the nation together, that when Jacob left Uncle Laban, he built an altar to Jehovah and he buried those idols under a tree. Bury them. Put them away. Repent. And make a determination to put Jehovah God as first and foremost in your life. The psalmist wrote an interesting statement over in Psalm 143 and verse 8. And there are a number of passages I suppose that I could have chosen that would remind me of this very important value in our life. He says, "Cause me to hear your loving kindness in the morning, for in you do I trust. Cause me to know the way in which I should walk, for I lift up my soul to you." The reality is that there's only one thing that is truly worth anything in this world: a relationship with God. Everything else is insignificant. Everything else. Where do you stand with God today? What is your relationship with Him? Maybe there's someone here today willing to acknowledge that Jesus Christ died on the cross for them and their sins. Willing to come on His terms and be buried in baptism. Whatever your need, we certainly would welcome an opportunity to help you and assist you. We invite you to come as we stand and sing the song today.